Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimbo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. We are sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of one-day fantasy sports. We're with you a little bit earlier this week because, full disclosure, Jeff, I've got my daughter's Christmas production tomorrow.
Hey, priorities. You know?
But it was another fascinating week. We're going to get into it in just a moment. But, Jeff, it was a great weekend. We had a really enjoyable show on Sunday night with Dallas Clark joining us in the studio. And before that, we got to go on the road, take our show on the road again in Belfast. And we were sat in the airport at Heathrow at 5:30 in a coffee shop, as is normal.
Yeah, and, pretty usual.
And we were saying, you got to really love this. But we see it as a privilege, right, to go and do this thing. It's not a chore in any way. It was absolutely fantastic from start to finish.
You got it exactly right, my friend, because anytime we get an opportunity to go out and just share the joy of NFL football with the fans, it's really one of those deals you got to pinch yourself, because it's hard to believe that we get an opportunity to do it. The people in Belfast were absolutely amazing. Mm. And that was when we walked in there, Neil, and it's an hour before the show, and there's lined up out the door at a beautiful facility, and then just the whole thing. Dallas was amazing, and Sean, and it was really fun. Really, it was good.
If you weren't there, and obviously majority of you weren't, because you're listening to us from all across the UK and around Europe, it was priceless. It was gold to see Jeff in a game of Christmas charades. Acting out the butt fumble. That would have been worth the admission alone, although it was free to enter.
All I'm glad about that whole charades deal was I didn't get Randy Bullock.
Yeah, that one went to Dallas and was kind of lost in translation. Let's start to look back on week 13 in the NFL, Jeff. And quite often we have people say to us, please don't mention the Sunday night game. I don't want to know the score of the Sunday night game, but I don't think we can start anywhere else, because it was kind of unfolding the events in Seattle as we were coming off air last night and going our separate ways. I think we have to talk about the fact that Cam Newton was benched for the first series. Derek Anderson throws a interception deep in his own end of the field, and the Seahawks are off and running for the night.
Yeah, you know what? And I've tried to answer that on Twitter. You never know, because you're not there and you're not in the moment with the team, all the stuff that goes on. But I will tell you this, after having done this for 30 years in pro coaching, that anytime you set down your quarterback and your leader, who's the guy who's professed to be the leader of your football team, in a huge game, that it's a must-win game, and you make that drastic a move, that tells me that something's deeper than just not wearing a tie on the airplane.
I wrote on the train this morning about 8:30 this morning. Maybe I was sleep deprived. I started writing about this for my Sky Sports column. And part of me at the time, and I wrote that down, it was like, well, Ron Rivera has rules and he sticks to them, and fair play to him for doing that. And then as the day's gone on, and I'm glad we can now get into it, I'm starting to think, well, what would the players in that locker room think? Because I don't know if they want everyone to be treated the same. Jimmy Johnson always said that his players weren't all treated the same. Would there have been uproar if Cam hadn't been told off for not wearing a tie from the third string running back? I mean, now he's got a battle on his hands, Jeff. The more I think about this, the more I think it was a huge move. And maybe it was about more than a coat and tie.
I think, really, and again, like I said, I've been through these kinds of things. Anytime you have rules, the toughest thing about having rules is you have to enforce them. And again, not being on the staff, not being in the locker room, not being around the football team, I think when you have a rule as simple as wear a tie on the road, that if a guy shows up at the airport and doesn't have a tie, you find a tie for him so that he has a tie.
Well, they found the issue was, and this is where it's interesting, they found ties. He was given ties. He didn't have a shirt, and he didn't want to wear a tie with the sweater vest that he was wearing, obviously, because he hasn't got a shirt.
See, okay, but you got to find one, right? Now there's an issue. Now you're starting to talk about an issue. You're talking about an attitudinal issue because, hey, listen, don't, you're on a charter airplane.
Yeah. Right?
It's not like you're, you know, at the Victoria's Secret runway. You're right. You're not in a fashion
show. We forgot, yeah, and if we, yeah, and also if we'd forgotten our shirts at Heathrow Airport when we're on our way to Belfast, you can buy a shirt.
Somewhere. Yeah, there's,
I know he's 6 foot five.
It's not a problem that's insurmountable. What it tells me again is that something transpired or something had. There's a history there where finally Ron has to just say, "Hey, listen, I'm running this show. This is the rules. I don't care who you are. You got to toe the line." And that again speaks to a deeper concern. You know, it's that old thing. Where there's smoke, there's fire. Mm. And you just don't make this drastic a move. You know, Ron Rivera played the game. He's a player's coach. He's not a guy that's out there, you know, like a young Tom Coughlin where you can't
wear white socks.
Yeah, can't wear white socks. Got to be 15 minutes before the meeting. Yeah. Coaches can't wear sunglasses on the practice field. Mm. I mean, that's not Ron. Ron Rivera is not a guy that has rules to harass players. Mm. So, again, this speaks to what I believe has to be a deeper, more fundamental problem inside the locker room.
Cam didn't seem that bothered, Jeff. We were watching the warm-up shots coming in from Seattle, and he's dancing, he's doing funny handshakes, he's doing the whole super cam thing around the field. And when we were recording some links after we'd finished, and you said Cam's not starting the game, he's been benched for a series. We wondered if it was... because it mentioned about pregame, we wondered if he'd gone too far.
Yeah, again, it really, really is to me frustrating when there's a certain humbleness that I think you have to have if you're a great leader. Mm. And again, how much of that stuff that you saw pregame was him basically trying to show up Coach Rivera and say, "Hey, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, you know, I'm fine
with it. Yeah, it's all good." Mm. You know? So again, I just you don't want to read too much into it. But I think for Ron Rivera to have done this in that game, it is a point of emphasis and now here we're going to just make sure that everybody understands this is not a circus.
Earl Thomas was lost for the Seahawks with a broken leg, probably done for the season. He was tweeting afterwards. He said, "A lot is running through my mind, including retirement." I mean, that was in the emotion of being injured straight away, but huge loss, right? I mean, for what they do in their system, talk us through that, him playing center field.
The thing that he can do for you is when you combine him with Cam Chancellor, Chancellor is the enforcer in the middle of the field. He's the box safety, the guy that goes down and plays on the line of scrimmage. But, you know, this guy's the guy, Earl Thomas is the guy that holds it all together. Mm. He's the safety that can range over the top, gives the help to the corners outside. He's a great middle player, has great ball skills, a vicious tackler. And so, again, when you talk to the guys in Seattle, and one of my ex-players, Maurice Kelly, is vice president of Seattle now, and Mo will tell you straight up that Earl Thomas is the heartbeat of the secondary. Yeah. You know, again, the corners all get the publicity, and Richard Sherman and those guys, those are the ones everybody wants to talk about. But Earl Thomas is the heartbeat of that secondary.
Yeah, sometimes, Jeff, you see two deep safeties and they can't even cover sidelines. You know, that exactly. He can go from the middle of the field on his own and cover it from sideline to sideline. But also, we saw another huge hit on Kelvin Benjamin last night over the middle. A couple of weeks ago, there was one on Gronk. I mean, we're talking about one of the most complete defenders in the entire NFL.
Yeah, and you make a great point because they're what we call a single high team. Everything they do is based off of a middle safety, a safety in the middle of the field who can range from, basically they give him from numbers to numbers on the field, and he has to make a play on every ball inside the numbers. That's extremely difficult to do. And so when you take that guy away, you're taking away a big chunk of that system, of that scheme.
Before we get into some of the games from week 13, let's just talk about this Jeff Fisher contract extension, which... came out. The Rams obviously weren't listening to me last week when I'd suggested he might be the most overrated coach in NFL history. Jeff, 2-year extension, but they're not giving too many details. We don't know if this was signed early in the year, which was rumored, so we're almost at the end of the year one of the extension. We just simply don't know at the moment.
Yeah, there's a lot of mystery about this. And then the fact that Les Snead gets an extension too, because you're talking about two guys who have basically been, you know, been in lockstep about the way they wanted to move that organization, and neither of them really, if you just base it on performance, if it's solely a performance-based business, as we say it is all the time, then it's a real head-scratcher.
Yeah, this is his 21st full season as an NFL head coach. He's 4-8, so he's not having a winning season this year. That means he's going to have had six winning seasons in 21 years. That's partly my point. I think, we talked about this a lot off the microphone. He's been very good to me when I've done interviews with him.
He's a great
guy. But Jeff, you always say it's a production business. I don't think the reputation matches the record.
Okay, now there's a couple things I think that are at issue here. Mm-hmm. Number one, you look at the formula. If you say the Jeff Fisher formula to win football games,
yep.
And you go back to the Titans when they were in the Super Bowl and they were, you know, yep. Perennial playoff team, big running back, pound the ball, time of possession, play great defense.
Yep.
That's the Jeff Fisher formula for success.
Be chippy, yeah. Be edgy.
Which is, again, that's part of it.
Yeah.
But now you look at this Rams team and you don't see that. Mm. You see a kind of a different mentality. And they still have the chippy part. They give up way too many points on defense. Mm. They haven't established a foundation of a ground game. And so if what you want is the Jeff Fisher formula, you're not getting it. That's the first thing. Now, the second thing to me, Neil, is, and I'm really interested to hear your response to this one, what does this say to your fan base that you're trying to build? It's not like, you know, they're the Packers and, you know, they've got an established fan base in L.A.
Right.
L.A. is a very fickle marketplace.
Oh. Yeah.
What are you saying to your fan base, and what are you saying to your football team? That mediocrity is okay?
Yeah, I mean, even Jeff Fisher on Hard Knocks this year said, we're not going 7-9 again. We've had enough of that, which is all good talk, but this is what they have been. He's never had a winning season with the Rams. He was 7-8-1 his first year. He's never gone any better than that. And that's why I would love to know the details of this contract. Is there a get-out clause? Are they, if they don't win the rest of the way and they go 4-12, is Stan Kroenke going to blow it all up anyway?
That's my, you know, again, that's the other guy you got to put in the focus on this thing. Stan Kroenke, what are you thinking? What are you selling in L.A.?
Mm. Is his timeline, we'll wait until we're in the new stadium?
Well, that may be.
But you lose fans along the way, right?
And you're talking about L.A., one of the most saturated pro sport communities in the United States. You've got two basketball teams, a hockey team, a football team, two baseball teams, and now you're talking about another football team coming into your marketplace. You can't afford, and USC football on top of it, and UCLA football on top of it. You can't afford in that marketplace to advertise mediocrity or promote mediocrity, and that's basically what they're doing.
Yeah, Jeff Fisher's up to 163 career losses. The all-time record is 165, so that's one you don't want. I know you've got to be around a long time to get that record, but it's not a good one. Let's go to the games from Week 13 then, Jeff. Our first one on Sky was a cracker, right? It was a good one.
It went
back and forth. Thought your guy, Aldrick Robinson, had got the game winner.
Yeah, here you go. My guy gets his moment. And what happens? The next play turns all around.
Dallas was right late on. Dallas Clark said, you know, we talked a lot about Eric Berry and what a great story it was. But we got to put some of this on Matt Ryan as well, haven't we? It almost looked like the kind of throw that quarterbacks would have made under the old two-point conversion rules, as in, I'm not worried if this goes the other way because it doesn't do any damage.
Yeah, and you know, you look at that throw and man, what a heartbreaker.
Mm.
A heartbreaker if you're a Falcon fan, because you're set to win the football
game.
And then all of a sudden it changes in one play. Now, I have to go back a year, I guess it is now, and say, I was wrong. I'm admitting I was wrong because I didn't like the change in the rules. I think we talked about that.
I
was more of a traditionalist.
Uh-huh.
But you know what you said last night on the telecast, Neil, is exactly correct. It has put an added dimension into the game, and it is now taking what was basically just an average football play and every down mundane play and made it an exciting part of the game.
Yeah, it was one of those plays, the old extra point Yep. Obviously, from a coach's point of view, you look at it differently because you're still looking, we've got to block this up, we've got to get a good snap, a good hold. Your average fan has gone to get a cup of tea.
Yeah, and you go back and look at the early in the game, there's a field or extra point blocked.
Yeah.
And now that changes everything. It changes the entire dimension of what you're doing because now you're chasing 2 points.
Didn't have to go for two if you got that earlier extra point. That's where it's all
correct.
Yeah, all fascinating how it plays out.
But you know what? And you look at this team, and I think one of our listeners tweeted in about when is Kansas City going to get their respect?
Yeah.
I think really the Chiefs are really kind of a – their lack of respect, if that's what you want to call it, is kind of a byproduct of what's going on in the NFL today. Mm. Because it's like comparing Julio Jones to OBJ. OBJ gets all the pub, all the headlines, all the camera time, all the FaceTime, but all Julio Jones does is produce,
yeah.
Right? And we have a saying in coaching, it's they never ask how, they just ask how many.
Yeah.
And talking about wins. And,
uh-huh.
And so, you know, I'm sure Andy Reid and the Chiefs are more than happy to go to the Super Bowl as an under the radar, under the wire team.
Yeah, they won 19 of their last 22 regular season games now, Jeff. And Alex Smith last night, just 4 incompletions. I mean, it sort of got a little bit lost. I mean, we knew he was being very efficient, but that's kind of Alex Smith. When you tally up the numbers at the end, you're like, wow.
Yeah, no, nothing particularly fancy. Although, I will say this. There was a 22-yard completion he threw over the middle where he got on his front foot and he let it rip.
Yeah.
And the thing about him, to me, that defines him is his accuracy, his ability to put the ball on receivers in places where they can handle it.
Let's go with a dangerous link, Jeff, because this might get me in trouble. From Alex Smith.
Oh, boy, here we go.
To the guy that the 49ers chose to go with in 2012. Over Alex Smith, and that's Colin Kaepernick. And I've got this tweet. First of all, I'm going to set this up. Alan Worthy says, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Reinbold are my favourite double act, and I respect your opinion, but be fair to Kaepernick, please. Your spat with him was a few years back. Well, you didn't have one, first of all. So let's put that disclaimer out there. This is not about the fact that I've met and not had the best of experiences with Colin Kaepernick. This is a quarterback who completed 1 of 5 passes for 4 yards, and he was sacked 5 times. He played 3 quarters of this game. He had 4 yards passing. He's the first quarterback in NFL history to have 5 sacks and under 5 passing yards. And we can't put it all on the weather because Matt Barkley's a Southern California guy, and he had 192 yards, and the Bears managed to score some points.
It was the same snow on both sides.
This is about production again, Jeff, and maybe a little bit of self-awareness, because Colin Kaepernick said afterwards he was surprised he got benched. Are you kidding me?
Wow. You know, I let me tell you, my history with this kid goes back to when he was a college player at the University of Nevada. Mm. We played him and beat him twice. Once when I was coaching at the University of Hawaii and once in a bowl game when I was at SMU. And in both cases, there are some distinct flaws that you can get after in his game.
Yeah.
His decision-making is not the best. His ability to read the full field, do all those things. He has a very difficult time when he's forced to throw to when he's moving to his left. Mm. And he's a guy that has the arm enough to make all the throws. It's whether he has the ability to sit in the pocket and read and let the game come to him. That's where it's been problematic for him. And, you know, I think I don't think you have a personal issue with him. but the viewers may think so, or listeners may think so. But really, I think it just comes down to, you know, it's like we say all the time, what have you done for me business?
Yeah.
Passing for 5 yards in a football game isn't doing much.
No, that will get you benched.
Yeah. And again, it's almost incredulous to me sometimes what I hear come out of players' mouths.
Yeah.
I mean, you threw for 5 yards, bro. 1 of how many?
1 of 5 for 4 yards, actually. 1 of 5 for 4 yards. You could have won a competition to be an NFL quarterback for a day and put up those kind of numbers. Probably.
Well, I'm just saying I know that's not good enough. And you as an athlete, you as a professional athlete, have got to understand that's not good enough.
I tell you what was good enough, Jeff, was the Baltimore Ravens yesterday.
Wow.
Yeah, well, you look at that. Where's that come from? So I've got another. I'm going to try and mix in some of the tweets because we didn't get to a lot of the mailbag stuff last week. But this one comes from Tom Strachan, who says, Neil, have you stopped crying over the Dolphins score? If so, do you think you're ready to talk about it? And we had another one from Lee Perry talking about how well the Ravens did. Jeff, they came into yesterday's game. Flacco had only thrown 11 touchdown passes on the season, fewest of any starting quarterback that's played every game this season. Then they had 17 offensive touchdowns. Flacco goes for over 380. They call off the dogs. He had four touchdown passes. They put Ryan Mallett in. Now I'm starting. That's made me go, wow, hang on a minute. Because if they put some offense with a smothering defense,
they got a chance.
Right.
They got a chance. You know, I'm happy for Marty Morningwig, who is actually one of my old players. I coached Marty when he was a college quarterback at Montana. And, you know, we've been good friends ever since. You know, he went through a tough go. You know, he had the Lions job, was head coach of the Lions, didn't work out for him there. You know, went back and was a coordinator for Andy and then was a coordinator in with the Jets and took the quarterback job after the Jets all got let go. He took the quarterback job in Baltimore and worked for another guy, I know, Mark Trestman. And it just didn't work out for Tress. So Marty got the job as coordinator midway through the season. And I see some more of Marty's fingerprints on that offense now.
Yeah.
And again, I think he is good for Joe Flacco. I think you see them now starting to diversify a little bit more offensively. And like you say, Neil, I think you're exactly right. When you have a defense like they have, if you can score 28 points a game, you're going to be in every game.
And some of those division races have bunched up now, Jeff. The Falcons are tied up with the Bucks. We can talk about Tampa Bay's big win on the West Coast at San Diego. You've got Pittsburgh and Baltimore at 7-5. Detroit won, but Green Bay kept one winning as well. So there's not some of these divisions are going to go, as the NFL likes it, they're going to go to week 17 when they load up with division games. Everything's a division game.
And they want those games to mean the most. That's one of the reasons why I love coming over at this time of year, because the games get bigger every week. And, you know, you look at how, just as you go through the divisional races, how a team like Miami, this is fascinating to me, who had played so well and looked like they were on a complete, you know, upturn, and then to go out and they just looked on defense particularly just looked disinterested, didn't look like they wanted to tackle. You compare how the Steelers played on defense to how the Dolphins played on defense. And the thing about the Dolphins, and this is what is so frustrating for Dolphins fans, I'm sure, is you look at them on paper and you say that's a better defense, and certainly a better defense than the numbers give you, and the effort just isn't there. I don't see the physicalness, I mean, there were a couple of runs in that game where it looked like the Dolphins had signed a non-aggression pact against the Baltimore offense, and they just didn't want to tackle.
Yeah, there's probably every chance. You mentioned Pittsburgh there, and one of the things we got into talking about last night on our show was in-game and halftime adjustments, but we could broaden that out to in-season adjustments, because Pittsburgh early in the year, it was bombs away, it was trying to find whether it was Darius Hayward Bay, Sammy Coates before he's hurt his hand, whoever it was opposite Antonio Brown. I don't have the numbers of how many catches Le'Veon Bell had last night, but it seemed like we were looking at a lot of screen passes. It was a lot different from what we'd seen of Pittsburgh earlier in the year.
I thought that they called, and Todd Haley, the offensive coordinator, called an outstanding game. You know, he kept the Giants, you know, kind of off kilter.
Yeah,
he used the screen game extremely well. Some third and long situations they picked up by running the screen, got the ball in Le'Veon Bell's hands, and really I thought the emergence of another threat at tight end was really, really critical for them, because you know you look back at the Steeler offense in the past when it's been going really well is when was making plays out there. But you know, when you have a tight end, and interestingly enough, Jesse James clanked one early in the game.
Yes.
And Ben went away from him.
Yep.
But Ladarius came in and really, really played well.
Well, Jesse James is kind of looks like that sort of normally reliable, but maybe athletically limited, whereas Ladarius Green can be that mismatch that you're looking for. Yeah. He just needed to get healthy.
He's another dimension tight end. You're right.
Odell Beckham said, I went into a bit of a rant, Jeff, after the game.
No.
Yeah, it's us against the world. It was Terry McCauley's officiating crew, which is the one that was the Josh Norman game last year. And Odell basically went into one about how the Giants got picked on. The Giants got flagged 4 times. Pittsburgh got flagged 12 times. I mean, again, it goes back to that. Some players, as they're young, you know, we've talked about Odell a huge amount over previous podcasts. But that's just looking for an excuse,
well,
I think.
You know, let me again, we're talking about where there's smoke, there's fire. It's interesting his comments, and you broke it down perfect. Four calls against the Giants, 12 against the Steelers. Mm. What he's talking about is his own little world, right?
Yes.
They were grabbing me. They hit me or all that. Hey, tuck your ears in and play, kid. Mm. That's what you need. You're a great player. Be a great player. You're not an official. You're not the head coach. It's not your job, right? That sound like Belichick. Do your thing. Do your job. You are one of the best players in the National Football.
Just be that.
Just be that.
Yeah.
Be content with being that, you know. And then you look at the other receiver. And Cruz comes out in the – I don't know if you saw this one.
He
comes out in the paper and says, there need to be answers. Somebody's got to answer to why I wasn't targeted. Zero targets in the game.
Right.
Now, if you got guys popping off in the media like that, you got issues. You got problems. And I think discipline is one of the problems that I see in that Giant offense. You know, you look at how they absolutely tried to force the ball to Odell in the second half.
Yeah,
right? And he's over in the head coach's ear. You know, again, those are all symptoms in my mind of a system that's, you know, you got to be able to deal with those. And this is, I'm going to say this because it's really true. When you get to pro football, coaching pro football, you're the thing you have to do better than anything else is manage personalities.
Yeah.
Right. And what I don't see in that Giant deal is I don't know if McAdoo is a guy who can manage those kind of personalities.
Yeah, new head coach, first year head coach, young, coming to terms with all that. Didn't really cover himself in glory, I think, with the Odell earlier in the season when there was a lot of issues there. I would say I didn't see that stuff about Victor Cruz. If that's happening, the Giants have a problem Victor is the team guy, is the guy. If you watch and I've seen, obviously, I see them away from the cameras. I see how they act. Yeah, Odell is mercurial at times. You know, sometimes he's in a good mood, sometimes not so much. You know, but he's always willing to help you out and do stuff. But Victor is the one that he'll volunteer. I'll go and meet those fans. Let me go over there and do. And if he's now, like you say, popping off about that kind of stuff, that's a worry because players want the football, Jeff. They still do want the football.
That is one of the reasons why a job in New York, whether it's the Jets or the Giants, is so very difficult because you've got so many papers in New York, and they're all competing for space and quotes. And so what those guys will do is they'll now, I'm sure, I am absolutely convinced that whoever interviewed Cruz said, hey, they didn't even try and throw the ball to you. What's going on? Mm. Don't they like you anymore? You know how the media goes to try and steer it to get a reaction.
Yeah.
And you got a guy, you know, I know there's a cooling off period after the game, but it's not long enough.
No.
But again, you've got to have control of your football team. And I'm not just blaming McAdoo. I'm saying this is a thing that started under Tom Coughlin.
Yep.
Because the Josh Norman day where he just went completely off track was the start of it, and there was really no discipline. That's a challenge for the Giants, and I think it's it speaks to a deeper rooted issue that they've got to deal with on their football team.
Let's go out west for a couple of games, Jeff, and talk about the Raiders. 24-9 down they were in that game, and they scored the rest of the points the rest of the way. And Derek Carr, we've got to talk. He's just big in those situations, Jeff. You can say all you like. You don't want to be in those sort of wild shootouts, but you know, finding ways to win those games is a skill in its own right, and they've got that.
I was fascinated last night when we were on the show about Dallas Clark's reaction to the Raiders.
Yeah, he was really excited.
He kind of cut us off.
Yeah, I wonder where he was going to go.
And he goes, "Let's marinate over this for a few." That's his direct quote. Mm-hmm. "Let's marinate over this for a second." And I'm thinking, he's going to rip the Raiders. He's going to say that.
I wondered what I'd set up with a stat. I thought he was going to rip me apart.
And then
all of a sudden
he comes out with, this is good for the league. This is good for football. It is. This is kind of, you need to have, I think, and I know I'm part of Raider Nation, but you need to have the Raiders as a relevant team in the National Football League. There's just too much history there, too much, image there. But look at this football team. Look at this Raider football team. You know, you got to stretch some around the league to find a guy who is more valuable to his football team than Derek Carr is to that football team.
Well, you always look at it, Jeff, as coaches. You're looking at third down, those ones where it really tests you. Third downs, red zone, fourth quarter.
When you're behind, all that stuff. And you're right. You can click or check all those boxes with Derek Carr.
Here's a question from Tom Marshall from the Mailbag. He says, at this stage, who would you have as your coach of the year between Jason Garrett or Jack Del Rio? So Jason Garrett's Cowboys, the first to book a place in the playoffs, Jeff, because Washington lost and the Cowboys already won on Thursday night. I mean, it's a good question, but it's a tough one.
This hit me this morning when I was riding the train in here, okay? You remember, it was preseason about, I don't know, 15, 18 years ago. And an established star quarterback goes down and an unknown has to step in. And what did he do with his football team?
He put the supermarket shelf stacking job to one side and he led the Rams to Super Bowl victory. No, not him. Tom Brady. Which one are you going, Tom or Kurt?
I'm going Kurt Warner. That's what it is.
It's Kurt, right?
When Romo got hurt, and this seems like a year ago, but when Romo got hurt, all of a sudden, everybody in Dallas and around the league is, well, that's the end of the Cowboys.
Yeah, really. It was the same with Trent Green, wasn't it?
And it was exactly the same. I remember Coach Vermeil in tears on the dais doing his press conference after Trent went down. And him saying that we're going to rally behind Kurt Warner.
Yeah.
And everybody was like, who?
Yeah. I mean, I think with that in mind, I would give the nod to Jason because he's working with what was an unknown commodity.
Fourth round quarterback he's working with.
And they didn't know what they had at that stage when they drafted him. Otherwise, they wouldn't have drafted him in the fourth round.
Absolutely not. And I think a guy that when you look at it, you look at how that staff, because the head coach, obviously the buck stops at his desk.
Yeah.
But when you look at what his staff has done, their defense is playing beyond their talent level for Rod Marinelli. And the offense has really kind of tailored what they do to what Zach Prescott can do. They're running plays that they could never run with Romo.
Right.
And they're taking advantage of the skill of their tailback and the multitude of skills of their quarterback.
And they've given him more and more each week. When you look at the start of the year, it was pretty basic by NFL standards, Jeff, compared to what it is now. And I guess he's just grown and grown and they've been more comfortable with it.
Yeah, and again, that's great coaching. When you take a guy and you build what you do around what they didn't say, okay, well, Jason Witten's our guy or Dez is our guy, or they said, we know what we have up front. We have really good people up front. We know we got a young tailback who has ability. And he didn't light the world on fire the first 2 weeks until he started to get a feel to how to play in that system. And then they Scott Linehan, they built an offense that is tailor-made to the strengths that they have, and that's great coaching.
Let's talk about one more game, then stay out west. Tampa Bay winning again.
Huge.
Going all the way across to San Diego. They've won six of their last eight. And Jeff, they were trailing in that game when Phillip Rivers was doing what Rivers always does. But they had, and you look at the formula that has helped Tampa Bay win, it's good play from Jameis Winston. Mike Evans steps up and makes plays. Doug Martin gets you a touchdown, and the defense gets turnovers. It was all of those things again. This team must be starting to believe, and now they've caught up the Falcons, who were red hot earlier in the year.
I agree with you. This team has played under Dirk Cutter a passion and a belief that you didn't see under Lovie Smith. Mm. You haven't seen it in Tampa since the John Gruden days.
No.
And, you know, I think that this team, the Bucks, and I'll be honest with you, I'm not sold yet, but when you watch the Bucks play, and to go to San Diego, fans, you got to know how hard it is to go to San Diego and win in San Diego if you're from the East Coast. To do that speaks volumes about this team, and this is quietly one of the hottest teams in the NFL.
Jeff, any other business from Week 13? Anything else that caught your eye?
It's interesting. It fascinates me, really, because 2 weeks ago, it was the legendary week of the missed extra points.
Yes.
And then last week, it was the week of, you know, the weekend of good hands.
Yep.
And this week, it was completely, you know, the weekend of the tight end.
Yeah.
And so what's next week going to hold for?
Well, that's the great thing.
That's why you love NFL football.
I think I said that at the start of the show, just as I was doing the bit where we say what games are coming up. And I pointed at the screen and then there is our blank canvas.
Yep.
And this will be filled in over the next 11 hours.
Yeah. And that's why it's so much fun. I can't even describe to the listeners how much fun it is to sit there with you and watch it all unfold, and then just to be able to talk about it and come in here.
And then we're making up stuff as we go. Look, let's stick a piece of tape up where Julio Jones can jump. I mean, that's great. That's what we like to try and do, is bring that sort of that thing to the viewers.
Well, I hope that the viewers and the listeners, you know, when you listen to this podcast, what you're doing is just, it's all of us just sitting around at the pub.
That's it.
Talking ball.
That's right. And actually, so that means I can blow my nose because I've come back from Belfast with a cold. I'm going to just say though, we were sporting the Christmas jumpers.
Those
and they are
jumpers.
Still available in the NFL Shop Europe. So go there and look at those. They are wonderfully terrible, right?
I want you to know that I took so much grief from Raider Nation for wearing a Kansas City Chiefs jumper. So all I'm going to tell you, Raider Nation, is first of all, the Raider one was sold out. And that doesn't surprise you because you know that it's the Raiders, right? And I wore that in honor of Coach Vermeil. I didn't wear it as a jab at Raider Nation. You got to know me better than that.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Thursday night. There's a game.
Yeah, what a game. Well, yeah, and also you coached with the Chiefs, didn't you, for a little bit?
Yep.
So, you know, that's why we chose that one because, again, the Raiders ones were sold out. We tried to order one in NFL UK. Something got lost in translation. It was between the Saints and the Chiefs. I was like, well, you got to go Chiefs. Surely you...
Yeah,
coach with them,
you know what?
And but yeah, what a game on Thursday. Let's get into our picks then, Jeff. We'll start with Thursday because that's going to be a good one.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. I. This is going to be a hard one to pick because, you know, you're looking at a Kansas City team that has great belief. There, you know, if you like you say, you go 19-23, last 23.
Kansas City won the first game pretty comfortably, Jeff.
I don't know who can say that. You know, but this Raider unit has, in particularly lately, is playing with a little bit of swagger, a little bit of confidence on defense in particular. Kenny Norton's getting it figured out on defense, and the run defense a little bit spotty.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, again, I gotta take my Raiders.
Jeff's going Oakland. I'm believing in the 19-3. For the Chiefs over the last 22. So I'm going the Chiefs to win at home. It's so early in the week, we don't actually know our games on Sky Sports yet. So we will just work our way through the week and pick them as best we can. Pittsburgh at Buffalo.
You know what? Buffalo had a chance to do something that no Buffalo team had done since 1966, which is go into Oakland and win in Oakland. They got the game in hand and find a way to lose it. What I see in Buffalo is too much of what I saw with the Jets. Mm. A team that is good enough to beat anybody, but is bad enough to lose to anybody.
Yeah.
And I think Pittsburgh right now recognizes it's December, it's playoff time, Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I'm taking Pittsburgh as well. It's Pittsburgh's time. You're going to back Ben Roethlisberger. This is a sneaky good game, this one, Jeff. Denver at Tennessee.
Yeah. It really is because, you know, you look at Denver wins in Jacksonville wasn't what you would call a convincing win.
No.
You know, and they had to really rely on their defense to make plays for them to win it. I like Tennessee. I really do like Tennessee. I think that Tennessee, where's this one at?
This is in Tennessee.
Yeah, if it's in Tennessee, I'm going to give the nod to them. And again, you talk about a team that is quietly now positioned to make a playoff run. That's the Titans.
I'm going to go Denver. I think when you look at the strength of those divisions and Tennessee and anyone in the AFC South, they haven't fared very well outside of their division. I'm going to pick Denver to win that one on the road. New Orleans at Tampa Bay. Drew Brees at home last week, Jeff, or yesterday. No touchdowns, 3 interceptions. I didn't see that coming.
Against the Lions.
You know,
and the Lions
have had some trouble in the secondary.
Had trouble in the secondary. You know, other than Slay, they're really... Who are they? And then they've got DeAndre Levy still not back at linebacker.
Yeah.
So that Lion defense is, you know, not exactly one you're going to say, wow, they're going to hold Drew Brees down. But I think Tampa will, and I think Tampa, again, because they know what's at stake in these games right now. They're playing well.
Yeah, and they've played well against the Saints over the years. I'm going to go Tampa to win that one as well. Let's move on to the next game, Washington at Philadelphia. Washington have dropped a couple now. Philadelphia in free fall.
Yeah, nosedive. Straight nosedive. I mean, Acapulco, cliff diver, nosedive. They are going.
We're talking Colin Kaepernick proportions. No, no.
No,
I need to
but
move
I
on.
Think, you know, I think you're right. I think the Redskins, but you look at Wentz, and I think what's happened to Wentz, one of our listeners tweeted in what's up with Wentz, and I think what's happened to Wentz is now there's enough tape. The defensive coordinators have seen him enough. And, you know, they're starting to out-scheme him.
Arizona at Miami.
Wow.
I'm going to go Arizona. I'm off the bandwagon already. And took one loss. See that? Look, I've got the phone. Six wins.
Are you going to take that phone case off now?
Yeah, it took me 6 wins to get the phone case on and 1 loss to get off the bandwagon. If I can work out how to get the phone case off, I will.
You know what?
Arizona for me.
I got to go with Arizona just because I'm such a Bruce Arians fan. And was last night not Bruce Arians? Because what do they do? 4th and 1.
Yep.
Air it out. That's get a big touchdown.
Yeah.
Then Washington's driving at the end. And conventional football wisdom in that situation says keep it in front. Keep it in bounds.
Yep.
Tackle it. And what does B.A. do? You see him go to Betcher, his coordinator, and said, get after him.
Yeah.
They throw 2-0 blitzes. 0 blitzes where they have nobody in the middle of the field and they outnumber the protection. It's risky. 2-0 blitzes in a row. Peterson picks the ball off. They win the football.
Yeah, I missed the end of those plays. We were sitting
no
on...
No risk it, no biscuit.
There you go. We were sitting on red zone and I suddenly realized I hadn't been for a bathroom break in 7 hours. So I took the opportunity. Both going Arizona in that one then. San Diego at Carolina. I'm going to go Carolina just because of the travel across and maybe get back on top.
Yeah, I think so. And, I was really felt for Philip Rivers in San Diego through that really, really costly interception at the end of the game and just kind of out of characteristic for him. But I think Carolina will bounce back at home.
This is potentially where the Cleveland Browns get it done, Jeff. They're coming off a bye at home to Cincinnati.
Who are they playing? St. Ignatius Middle School?
That's cold.
You asked me
Harsh
for...
But
you
fair.
Know what? I you
Harsh
asked
but
me,
fair.
You asked me for my lock last week, and I was going to say that my lock was the Browns won't lose. And then I thought, uh-oh. No, I can't
no,
even...
No, there's
I can't
no
even,
guarantee
I
of that.
I can't guarantee that one.
Can they beat the Bengals?
No.
All right. I'm going to Cincinnati as well to win that one. They just can't protect. That's the big issue, I think. Chicago at Detroit. I'm going Detroit at home to keep it rolling.
Yeah, I just don't know if the Bears with that quarterback, I don't know if they're good enough.
All right, both going Detroit. Houston at Indianapolis. Obviously, when Monday night game still to be played when we record this, I've said it, I'm not really sold on Brock Osweiler. Their offense is stagnant.
You know, I was going to ask Dallas that yesterday because we started talking about the playoff picture, and he said, well, he feels Houston's looming out there as a playoff team.
Yeah.
I don't think when you're getting that kind of quarterback play, that you can consider yourself a playoff caliber team. It just puts too much. Yeah, they had another 100-yard rusher. Yeah, but you've got to be able to throw the football in the National Football League to win.
Mm. Andrew Luck's been hugely successful against the AFC South. I'm going to Indianapolis for you, Jeff.
I'm
going to
take Indianapolis.
All right. There's a question here actually from Cy Taylor. It says, do the Texans convince themselves their quarterback is just inexperienced or do they look elsewhere? They're locked in for now, Jeff. Four years, $72 million, and a lot of that guaranteed.
Yeah, $72 million. That's a lot of money for a guy that's, you know, that's trying to figure it out. Mm. They've got to get better play at that position. And, you know, really, when you look at it, and I don't think it's all Osweiler's fault.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you look at his body of work going in last year.
Yep.
Obviously, he wasn't making those kinds of throws and you know, was that inconsistent. So I think it must be some of it scheme and asking the guy to do things he can't do.
All right. Let's go on to Minnesota at Jacksonville. I'm going to go Minnesota to win on the road. They haven't played very well away from home, but Jacksonville, same old stuff, Jeff, every week. It's mistakes early, pick six from Blake Bortles again yesterday, and then they rally back and they fall short.
Jacksonville's out of it. Minnesota still has a mathematical chance, and as long as you got a mathematical chance, you're going to show up and play. And I think, you know, again, it'll be good for Minnesota to have their head coach back on the sideline.
This question comes from Red Tom. Should the Jags stick with Bortles or look for a new quarterback? The draft looks bare for quarterbacks this coming year, so it would be free agency. But, Jeff, we talked about this on the fan tour on Saturday. He's 3 years in, and twice they've already called for extra coaching help to fix his mechanics.
Yeah, and, you know, that's really disconcerting when you think about it, because, you know, one of the things that the kid is suffering from is the lack. You know, we talk about Jacksonville and their, the way they've stuck with the program through all of, you know, Gus Bradley's tenure. Well, yeah, they have with Gus, but they haven't with the offensive coordinators.
Right.
And, you know, anytime you change coordinators, now every, you know, the language
it's
changes,
like they
the
forget,
verbiage
It's
changes.
Like they forget that part of it, Jeff, because they've invested the first round pick in the quarterback.
Exactly.
And then he's not in the best situation. Alex Smith had it for years.
I am going to make a prediction here, and I don't even think it's a bold prediction, but when they do make a change in Jacksonville, they will bring in an offensive head coach, and one particularly that's known for work with quarterbacks.
So like Miami did with Adam Gase.
Absolutely.
That whole kind of quarterback whisperer thing.
Absolutely. And you see where that has gotten them. Mm. You know, I think Tannehill's playing his best football of his career, because Adam Gase understands that you have to, you know, you have to tailor what you do around that guy's skills.
Yeah, I think you'll see that Hugh Jackson got it because he had a good relationship with Andy Dalton and elevated himself.
That's how Trestman got the Bears job.
Ben McAdoo and his relationship with Eli and on and on.
It doesn't work every time, but you have to understand that when that guy is the focal point of the franchise and everything goes through him, you better have somebody and a system that he understands, number one, and that he can execute, number two.
Let's move on to New York Jets at San Francisco. I'm going to go fancy the 49ers to pull off a bit of a shock here. End the streak. No, the Jets are too good on defense. I'm going Jets. I almost did it then.
Talked yourself right out of that.
What about you, Jeff?
Jets.
All right. The Falcons at the Rams. There's a lot of teams got to make some big cross-country trips this week.
Yeah, and again, I think the Falcons, it'll be really telltale to me of how Dan Quinn rallies his team, because that was a gut shot yesterday.
Yeah, I just think the Rams are in too much of a stagnating, kind of plodding on offense.
Yeah, and I don't think that their defense particularly is, you know, going to be worrisome to Kyle Shanahan and that Atlanta offense. They have so many weapons, so many ways to get the ball moved around, that pressure stuff is not going to be a big deal to them.
Falcons for you?
I'm going to take Falcons.
All right, I'm going to go Falcons as well. I suspect this will be one of our games on Sky Sports on Sunday. Seattle at Green Bay, certainly a heavyweight clash now that Green Bay are back in the mix in the NFC North. I think Seattle are so good at home. 6-0 at home now, Jeff, but they're not the same team on the road. This is a tough one to call because of that.
Yeah, and you know, what did I say yesterday when we were talking about Seattle? What did Seattle need to do last night? Get Thomas Rawls going. Get the running game going. Now, in the weather, on the road, in Wisconsin, against Aaron Rodgers, your best friend is your running game. And if they can run the ball against Green Bay, they'll win the game. But I'm going to take the Packers.
All right, you're going Green Bay. I'm going to go Seattle to do what you said. They lose one of the best defenders in the NFL in Earl Thomas, but they've got back one of them in Michael Bennett.
It's good to see Michael playing again.
Yeah. Let's go Dallas at the New York Giants, Sunday Night Football.
Wow.
I'm going to go Dallas to win that one. Keep it rolling.
You got to take Dallas in this one. I think Dallas is just playing too well and too strong. This is going to be, again, this is a McAdoo moment. This is where you have – these are defining moments in head coaches' tenures. Mm. Once you've had a stinker, once you disappoint and you're still in the hunt in the playoffs, you got your arch rival coming to your place. Now we'll see, you know, whether he can get his team to play.
One more game to pick, and this is a tricky one. Monday Night Football, Baltimore at New England. Ravens have been up there and done that before, Jeff, in New England.
I think it'll be a different animal that Flacco faces, though, certainly this week than in New England than what he faced against Miami. Baltimore's not going to run away scared. You know, they're not impressed, I don't think, overly impressed with New England. But I still think that New England has enough weapons, and Tom Brady is just so sharp. I think that New England will win at home. They're tough to beat at home.
All right, you're going for New England. Prepare yourself for this hot take, Jeff. I think I might have had too much cold and flu medicine, but the Patriots have lost at home twice this year already. This will be number three. The Ravens are going to stick it to them, and Baltimore are going to win that game.
I like that. I like that decisiveness.
Yeah, hopefully by the weekend everyone will have forgotten. I want to take one more question, and then we'll wrap up this week's Inside the Huddle so I can give my nose a good blow. People need to know that. It comes from Michael Russell. He says, in soccer, coaches who've never played is a rarity, but it's more common in football. Why is it so accepted?
Well, I think there's a couple reasons for that. It's that, first of all, to play in the National Football League, there's very few guys. Actually, there's, 2,000 NFL players?
Physically capable of it.
And then, to be real flat honest with you, there are a lot of guys that have played the game that don't want to coach because the grind of coaching is just too much. Now, it's changing a little bit now because there's more money in it. But I think I told you this story when we were on our way to Belfast.
We're in the airport talking about this, weren't
we? Abe Gibron, who was the head coach of the Chicago Bears and classic guy. Jeremiah was a bullfrog.
Look it up. NFL films.
NFL films. Check it out. Big Abe. His son played for me. And so late in his life, when Abe had been battling some health issues, the NFL really kind of, at least it did once upon a time, take care of their own. So he was an advanced scout for the Seahawks. And he came into Philadelphia, and I had a chance to sit with him, and I started to develop a friendship. Went down and saw him in Tampa when he was bedridden at the end of his life, and Mrs. G brought out his old scrapbook, and he was what they called a watch charm guard for the Browns back in the Paul Brown era, and he got ostracized in Cleveland because he started the NFL Players Association.
Right. Wow.
So Paul Brown got rid of him. I think he went to Washington. Anyway, but what he said to me was that when he got into coaching, which is the late 50s, early 60s, very rarely did a player go become a head coach. Mm. He would go be a teacher or accountant, whatever his training was after the game, because there was just no money in it. Now, these guys are making, the coordinators are making well over $1 million a year, so there are more guys that want to do it. However, what shocks them a lot of times is, you know, you're a player, you're in the off, you'll come to the facility at 6:30 in the morning, you're done at 5.
Yeah.
When you're a coach, you're still looking, when it's 5 o'clock, you're still looking at 7 more hours of work.
We were talking at the airport about what will Peyton Manning do, and there are many things that Peyton might do. He might go into front office, he might be that John Elway type, he may even be an owner, he may go into television, but we said, don't expect, even though he's got that great football mind, don't expect him to be a coach. Probably because actually, the players would drive him mad, Jeff, because they wouldn't be as good as him.
Well, and I think they where it's tough, it's amazing, because when I was going into coaching, my last coach told me, he said, Jeff, the hardest thing for you is going to be, it's not going to matter as much to them as it mattered to you.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so you look at a guy like Peyton, who was such a meticulous preparation guy, and you know, it was interesting hearing Dallas talk last night.
He said it kind of wear you out. You had to be keeping up with him. Yeah,
he could wear everybody out because he was just so driven to the point where he got sway over Tony and Tom Moore, the offensive coordinator, because he was just like a coach.
Yeah.
But those guys are rare now. Those guys are rare. And so now you go into the business with that, and now you draft some rookie who, you know, doesn't want to prepare.
Right.
That's not that doesn't make for a very good relationship.
That's not going to work. Jeff, we are out of time for this week's podcast.
Hey, I'm going to tell you something. We got to do this twice a week.
We have. It's early in the week, isn't it? We should be back.
And you know what? I want to make this statement because I've got a lot of feedback on Twitter about it. We got to Belfast because Belfast
reached out to us.
They came to, I mean, they just inundated NFLUK.com with, we want the NFL in Ireland and we want ITH in Ireland. We want Inside the Huddle in Ireland. So again, I'm starting to hear it from the, you know, from Southampton, from Wales,
Cardiff. Yeah.
So if that's what you want, hey, you got to let us know because the NFL will listen.
Yep. That's it for this week, Jeff. I'm struggling, man. I need to go blow my nose. Say goodbye.
Aloha.
Think you're the best at fantasy football? Don't wait till the end of the season to find out. Put your fantasy football knowledge to the test and win big every week at DraftKings.co.uk. DraftKings is the destination for one-week fantasy football. At DraftKings, you can play whenever you want, against who you like, in a variety of contests. Playing is easy. Just choose your contest, create your lineup, and follow your team live. Hurry to DraftKings.co.uk/NFL and play for free. That's DraftKings.co.uk/NFL. Play free for a shot at winning amazing prizes, including a trip to the Super Bowl, a jersey of your choice, DraftKings merchandise, and much more. Only at DraftKings.co.uk/NFL.